Tuesday. The purpose of a fish trap is to catch fish. And when the fish are caught, the trap is forgotten. The purpose of words is to convey ideas. And when the ideas are grasped, the words are forgotten. Where is the man who has forgotten words? He is the man I would like to talk to.
It is difficult to forget the words. They cling to the mind. It is difficult to throw the net because only fishes are not caught into it. The fisher is also caught. This is one of the greatest problems. Working with words is playing with fire. Because words become so important that the meaning loses meaning. The symbol becomes so heavy that the content is completely lost. The surface hypnotizes you and you forget the center. This has happened all over the world. Christ is the content. Christianity is just a word. Buddha is the content. Dhammapada is just a word. Krishna is the content. Gita is nothing but a trap. But Gita is remembered and Krishna is forgotten. And if you remember Krishna, you remember only because of the Gita. If you talk about Christ, it is because of the churches, the theology, the Bible, the words. People carry the net for many lives without realizing that this is just a net, a trap. As if one goes on carrying a ladder. Buddha used to say, few men cross the river. The river was dangerous. It was in flood. It must have been the rainy season. And the boat saved their life. Then they thought they must have been very, very intelligent. They thought, this boat saved us. How can we leave it now? This is our savior. And this will be ungrateful to leave it. So they carried the boat on their head in the town. Somebody asked them, what are you doing? We have never seen anybody carrying a boat. They said, no, we will have to carry this boat for our whole life. Because this boat saved our lives. And we cannot be ungrateful. Those intelligent looking people must have been stupid. Thank the boat, but leave it there. Don't carry it. You have been carrying many types of boats in your head. May not be on your head, but in your head. Look within. Ladders, boats, paths, words. This is the content of your head, of your mind. The container becomes too much important. The body becomes too much important. The vehicle becomes too much important. And then you are a blind man. Because the vehicle was just to give you the message. receive the message and forget the vehicle. The messenger is just to give you the message, receive the message and forget the messenger. Thank him, but don't carry him in your head. Muhammad insisted again and again, almost every day of his life, that I am just a messenger, a peygamber. Don't worship me. I have just carried a message from the divine. Don't look at me, look at the divine who has sent the message for you. But Muslims have forgotten the source. Muhammad has become important. The vehicles. Says one, where can I find a man who has forgotten words? He is the one I would like to talk to. A man who has forgotten words, he is worth talking, because he has the innermost reality, the center of being within him. He has the message. His silence is pregnant. Your talking is important. What you are doing when you are talking? You are not talking anything in particular. You have got no message. Nothing is to be delivered. Your words are empty. They don't contain anything. They don't carry anything. They are just symbols. And when you are talking, you are simply throwing your rubbish. It may be a good catharsis for you, but for the others, it can be dangerous. Now, how can you talk with a person who is filled with words? Impossible. The words don't give the space. The words don't give the door. The words are too much, you cannot penetrate. To talk with a man who is filled with words is almost impossible. He cannot listen, because for listening one should be silent, because for listening one should be receptive. Words don't allow that. Words are aggressive. They are never receptive. You can talk, but you cannot listen. And if you cannot listen, your talk is the talk of a madman. You are talking not knowing why. You are talking not knowing what. You go on talking because it gives you a sort of release. You feel good after having a good chit-chat. You feel good because you are relieved. Your talking is part of your tensions. It is not coming from you. It is just a disturbance. It is not a sound. It has no beauty of its own. That's why whenever you talk, you simply bore the others. But why he is listening? He is not listening. He is just waiting to bore you. Just for the right moment. And he can take the reins in his hands. I have heard it happen. One great leader the great politician was speaking, and he spoke and spoke, and it was getting to be midnight. By and by, the ideals left. Only one person was left in the heart. The leader thanked him and said, "You are the only lover. You seem to be the only authentic follower. I feel grateful to you. When everybody has left, you are here." The man said, "Don't be deceived. I am the next speaker." When you listen, you are listening because you are the next speaker. You can tell that a man, this is a bargain. If you want to bore others, you have to allow them to bore you. So really, when you say that a certain person is a bore, is that person who will not give you any opportunity to be the next speaker. He goes on, and you cannot find the gap from where to enter and start boring. That person looks like a bore. Otherwise, every mind filled with words is a bore. Then you will realize this. Why somebody is bored? Because there are only words, no faces in them, only trap. Useless, meaningless, there is no content. It is like a rattling of something, a noise. No meaning is carried. Whenever there is meaning, it is beautiful. Whenever there is meaning, you grow through it. Whenever there is meaning, the encounter with a man who has meaning gives you a new upsurge of energy. It is not a wastage. It is a learning. It is an experience. Rare and difficult to get a man who is silent. If you can get a man who is silent and persuade him to talk to you, you will gain much. Because when the mind is not filled with words, the heart speaks to the heart. Then everything comes out of silence. And when a word is born out of silence, it is beautiful. It is alive. It shares something with you. When a word comes only out of the crowd of words, it is mad. It can madden you. One small boy was asked by his teacher, "But has your younger sister," the boy was 5 and the sister just 2, "has she learned speaking yet?" The boy said, "Yes, she has learned speaking, and now we are teaching her to be quiet." This is the mystery. You have to teach words. It is part of life. And then one has to learn how to be silent and how to be wordless. Universities, parents, teachers, they teach you words. And then you have to find a master who can teach you how to keep quiet. One German scholar came to Raman and asked him that, "I have come from very far to learn something from you." Raman laughed and he said, "Then you have come to a wrong place. Go to some university. Go to some scholar, a great pundit. There you will be able to learn. If you have come to me, then be aware. Learning is not possible here. We teach only unlearning. I can teach you how to understand, how to throw words away, to create a space within you, and that space is divine. That space is God. Where are you seeking? In words, in scriptures? Then one day or the other you will become an atheist. A pundit, a scholar cannot remain theist for long. Remember, howsoever he knows, whatsoever he knows about the Bible and the Gita and the Quran, a scholar is bound to become atheist someday or other. Because that is the logical consequence of gathering words. Sooner or later he will ask, where is God? Because no Babel can reply it. No Gita can supply it. Rather, Babels and Gitas and Qurans, when they are too much on your head, you miss the divine. Because the whole space is covered. Too much furniture in you. The God cannot move. The God may not be able to make any contact with you. If the mind is too worldly, it is impossible to listen. And if you cannot listen, how can you pray? It is impossible to wait. Words are too impatient. They are knocking from within to go out. I have heard, once it happened, Mullah Nasruddin phoned in the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, phoned to the clerk of the bar, and he said, tell me when the bar is going to be opened. He said, this is no time to inquire such things. And you know Nasruddin well, because you are a regular customer. That not before 9 in the morning. Go to sleep and wait up to 9. But after 10 minutes, again he phoned. And he said, this is urgent. Tell me when the shop is going to be opened. Now the killer felt annoyed. He said, what are you doing? I told you not a single minute before 9. And don't go on phoning me again and again. But after 10 minutes, he again phoned. The killer said, you're not really doing something. Have you gone mad? You will have to wait up to 9. Nasruddin said, you don't understand. I am locked in the shop. And I want to go out. If your mind is too much burdened with words, theories, scriptures, they will go on knocking. Give way if you want to go out. And when you want to go out, God cannot enter in. When the mind wants to go out, it is not open for anything that is incoming. It is closed. The way is one-way traffic. Double traffic is not possible. When you are aggressive through words going out, nothing can penetrate you. Neither love, nor meditation, nor God. And all that is beautiful happens as an ingoing process. When you are silent, no word knocking within to go out. When you are waiting, in that moment of waiting, beauty happens, love happens, prayer happens, God happens. But if a man is too much addicted with words, he will miss all. In the end, he will have a long collection of words and theories, logic, everything. But nothing is worth because the content is missing. You have the net, the trap, but no fish is there. If you really had caught the fish, you would have thrown the net immediately. Who bothers? If you have really used the ladder, you forget it. Who thinks about it? You have transcended it. It has been used. So whenever a man really comes to know, knowledge is forgotten. That's what we call wisdom. A wise man is one who has been able to unlearn the knowledge. He simply drops all that is non-essential. Says Pantudu, where can I find a man who has forgotten words? He is the one I would like to talk to. He is worth talking. It may not be so easy to persuade him to talk, but just to be near him, just to sit by the side, will be a communion, will be a communication. The deepest that is possible, two hearts will melt into each other. But why this addiction with words? Because the symbol appears to be the real. And if it is repeated again and again, through repetition you become auto-hypnotized. Repeat anything, and by you will forget that you don't know. The repetition will give you the feeling that you know. Go to the temple for the first time. You go in ignorance. It is hypothetical. You don't know whether this temple really contains anything, whether there is God or not. But go every day, again and again, and go on repeating the ritual, the prayer, and whatsoever the priest says, go on doing it, years after years, day after day. You will forget the hypothetical state of mind that was there in the beginning. Continuous repetition, then the thing gets into the mind, and you start feeling that this is the temple. God lives there, this is the abode of God. Now you have moved in the world of appearance. That's why every religion insists to teach the children as immediately as possible. Because once you miss childhood, it is very difficult to convert people into foolish things. Very difficult. Psychologists say that the age of 7, everybody should be caught before it. He should be converted to be a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Christian or anything, a communist, theist or atheist, it doesn't make any difference. But catch hold, grab the child before 7. Because up to the age of 7, the child learns almost 50% of his whole knowledge he is going to learn in his whole life. 50% only is left. And this 50% is very meaningful because it becomes the base. He will learn many things. He will create a great structure of knowledge. But all that structure will be based on the knowledge that he has received when he was a child. And at this moment, before the age of 7, the child has got no logic, no argumentativeness. He is trusting, exploiting. He is believing. He cannot disbelieve because he does not know what belief is, what disbelief is. When the child is born, he has no mind to argue. He does not know what argument is. Whatsoever you say is true, appears true. And if you repeat it, the child is hypnotized. That's how all the religions have exploited humanity. The child has to be forced to conform to a pattern. And once the pattern is deep-rooted, now, nothing can be done. Even if later on the child changes his religion, nothing much will change. Look at a Hindu who has become a Christian. Nothing has changed. On the contrary, his Christianity will be just like Hinduism. Because the base, it happened, there existed a tribe of cannibals near Amazon. By and by they have killed themselves and disappeared. Now only 200 or somewhat near that of that tribe has remained. They have killed each other and eaten. One missionary went there to work. The chief of the tribe spoke with him in perfect English. He was surprised. And he said, "What? You speak perfect English. Not only perfect English, but perfect Oxford accent. And still you are a cannibal?" The man said, "Yes, I have been to the Oxford. And I have learned much. Cannibals, yes, we are still. But now I use knife and fork." "That I have learned. This must change, happens later. Nothing much can happen. Convert a Hindu to Christianity, his Christianity will be just like Hinduism. Convert a Christian to Hinduism, he will remain a Christian deep down. Because the base you cannot change. You cannot make him a child again. You cannot make him innocent. That moment is lost. If this earth is going to be ever really religious, then we will not teach Christianity, Hinduism, Mohammedanism to children. That is one of the greatest crime committed. We will teach prayer, we will teach meditation, but not sex. We will not teach words and beliefs. We will teach a way of life. We will teach happiness. We will teach ecstasy. We will teach how to look at the trees, how to dance with the trees, how to be more sensitive, how to be more alive, and how to enjoy the blessing that God has given. But not words, not beliefs, not philosophies, not theologies. No, we will not lead them to a church or to a temple or to a mosque, because these places are the sources of corruption. They have corrupted the mind. We will lead the children to nature. There is the temple, the real church. We will teach the children to look at the floating clouds, at the rising sun, at the moon in the night. We will teach him how to love. And we will teach him not to create barriers towards love, meditation, prayer. We will teach him to be open and vulnerable. We will not close his mind. And we will, of course, teach him words, but simultaneously we will teach him silence also. Because once words get into the base, silence becomes difficult. You come to me, your problem is this, because at the base there are words, and now you are trying to meditate and be silent. And the base always is there. Whenever you are silent, the base starts functioning. So you feel too much thinking when you meditate, even more than you feel ordinarily. What is happening? Because when you are silent, you are inwards, and you become more sensitive to the inner nonsense that goes on and on. When you are not in meditation, you are outward going, extrovert. You are involved with the world. You cannot listen to the inner noise that goes on. Your mind is not there. It is continuously there, but you cannot hear it. You are occupied. But whenever you close the eyes and look within, the madhouse opens. You can see and feel and hear, and then you become afraid and scared. What is happening? And you were thinking that through meditation you will become more silent, and this is happening just the opposite. In the beginning it is bound to happen, because a wrong base has been given to you. The whole society, your parents, your teachers, your universities, your culture have given you a wrong base. You have been already corrupted. Your source is poisoned. That is the problem. How to de-poison you? It takes time. And one of the most difficult things is to get rid of all that you have known to under. Says Pandit Taju, where can I find a man who has forgotten words? He's the one I would like to talk to. Only a sage is worth talking. Only a sage is worth listening. Only a sage is worth living with. What is a sage? An empty boat. No words inside. The empty sky without the clouds. No sound. No noise. Nobody met. No chaos within. A continuous harmony. Equilibrium, balance. He lives as if he is not. He is as if he is absent. He moves, but nothing moves within him. He talks, but the inner silence is there. It is never disturbed. He uses words, but those words are only vehicles. Through those words, he is sending you something which is beyond words. And if you catch and grab the words, you will miss. When you listen to a sage, don't listen to his words. They are sacrificial. They are superficial. They are only peripheral. Listen to him. Don't listen to his words. When words reach you, you just put them aside as a traveler will do who has passed their sea. He leaves the boat there, goes on. Leave the boat there and go on. If you carry the boat, you are mad. Then your whole life will become a burden, and you are burdened by the boat. A boat is not to be carried on the head. Feel grateful, that is okay. But this is doing too much, carrying the boat on the head. How many boats you are carrying on the head? Your whole life has become static because of the weight. You cannot fly. You cannot float. Such a dead burden you are carrying, not only from one life, this life, from many lives. You go on collecting all that is useless, futile. But why this happens? There must be some deep reason. Otherwise, everybody would not be doing it. Why it happens? In the first place, you think the word is the reality. The word God is God. The word love is love. The word is the real. The word is not the real. You have to make a distinction, a clear-cut distinction, that the word is not the real. The word only symbolizes, indicates, but it is not the real. If once you get in this step that the word is the real, then somebody says, I love you. And the word is the real. So you feel because he says he loves you, he loves you. Then you will be frustrated. If you cannot see the wordless reality, you will be frustrated. And all your pathways of life, everywhere you will be frustrated. Because you will take the word. Many people come to me, they say, that this girl loved me. She said it herself. This man loved me and now the love has disappeared. They both were deceived by the words. Dale Carnegie suggests that even if you are married for 20 years, don't forget to use the same words you used to do when you were courting your wife. Continue. Every morning say the same as you were doing when you were courting. Don't drop those words. Every day say that nobody exists like you. You are the most beautiful person and I will die without you. Says Dale Carnegie, even if you don't feel, go on saying, because words are realities. And the wife will be deceived and the husband will be deceived. Because we live by words alone. You don't know anything else. You don't know anything real and how to be in contact with the reality. When someone says, I love you, finished. When someone says, I hate you, finished. Put aside the words and look at the person. When someone says, I love you, don't get entangled with the words. Put aside. Look at the person in his or her totality. Nobody can deceive you. Love is such a fire. You will be able to see it. You will be able to touch it. You will be able to know it, whether it is there or not. Love cannot be hidden. If it is there, really words are not needed. When somebody really loves you, he will not say that I love you. It is not needed. Love is enough unto itself. It needs no salesmanship. It doesn't need anybody to persuade, to convince. It is enough. It is a fire. Nothing is more fiery than love. It is a flame in the dark. When there is a flame, you need not say anything. It is there. No advertisement is needed. No propaganda is needed. Try to separate words from reality in your day-to-day life. When someone says, I hate you, don't believe in the word. This may be just a momentary thing. This may be just a faith. Don't go to the word. Otherwise you will make an enemy for your whole life. As you have made friends because of words, you have made enemies because of words. Don't go to it. Look in the person. Look in the eyes. Feel the whole. it may be just a momentary reaction. Out of 199%, it is the possibility. It is just a momentary thing. He feels hurt by something. He reacts and says, "I hate you. Wait, don't decide. Don't say this is an enemy." Because if you say, you are not only deceived by others' words, you are deceived by your own. If you say, this is an enemy, now this word will cling. And even if he changes tomorrow, you will not be so ready and so willing to change. You will carry it within you. And then through your insistence, you will create the enemy. Your enemies are false. Your friends are false. Because words are not reality. Words can do only one thing. If you go on repeating them, they give you the appearance of reality. Says Adolf Hitler in his biography, autobiography, Mein Kampf, that I know only one difference between the truth and the lie, and that is a lie repeated so many times becomes true. And he knows by experience. When he says, he means he did it. He continuously repeated lies, but he went on repeating. In the beginning they looked foolish. He started saying that it is because of the Jews that Germany has been defeated in the First World War. It is absolutely absurd. It is said once he was speaking in a meeting and he asked, because he has repeated so many times and people have become aware of the word, they have become addicted with it. He asked, who is responsible for the defeat of Germany? One man stood and he said, the bicycle riders. Hitler was surprised. He said, what? Why? The man said, then why Jews? He was a Jew. Why Jews? Even when Hitler was dying, and again Germany was defeated and completely destroyed, he didn't believe that it is because of Stalin, Churchill and Roosevelt. He didn't believe it is because of the enemies who are superior, more powerful, that he is being defeated. His last verdict again is the same, that it is a Jewish conspiracy. They are working behind, and because of them we are defeated. And the whole Germany believed, one of the most intelligent people on the earth. But intelligent people can be stupid, because intelligent people always believe in words. That's the problem. Germany, most intelligent, most scholarly. Germany has produced the greatest professors, philosophers. The whole country is intelligent. How such a stupid man like Adolf Hitler persuade them? But there is nothing illogical. This is the logic. A land of professors, intelligentsia, so-called intellectuals, is always word addicted. If you go on repeating a word again and again and again, hammering and hammering, people listening again and again start feeling this is true. Truth is created out of lies if you go on repeating. Repetition is the method to convert a lie into a truth. But can you convert a lie into a truth? Just the appearance. Try it. Go on repeating something and you will start believing it. It may be you are not so miserable as you look. Because you have been repeating that I am in misery, I am in misery, I am in misery. And you have repeated it so often, now you look miserable. Just look into your misery. Are you really miserable? really in hell as you saw by your face? Have a second thought. And immediately you will not feel so miserable, because nobody can be as miserable as you look. It is impossible. God doesn't allow that. It is repetition. It is the art of hypnosis. One French psychologist, Emile Coué, used to treat people. His method was simply repetition. Suggest auto hypnosis. You go to him, you say that I have a headache, constant headache, no medicine is helping. Tried all the pathies, even naturopathy, nothing helps. He will say there is no need because there is no headache. You simply have believed in it. And going to this doctor and that, they all have helped you to believe that yes, headache is there. Because if they don't believe in your headache, they cannot live. So they cannot say that you don't have any headache. When you go to a doctor, even if you have nothing wrong, he will find something. A doctor exists on that. Talking, who will help you immediately? Almost 50% of the headache will disappear just by talking to you, without any medicine. And he will feel the relaxation that is coming on your face, and now he knows the trick will do. Then he will give you a formula that you have to continuously repeat day, night, whenever you remember that there is no headache. And every morning when you get up, repeat, I am getting better and better every day. Within 2-3 weeks, the headache disappears. A real headache cannot disappear that way. In the first place, the headache was created by words. In the first place, you hypnotize yourself that you have a headache. Now you have dehypnotized. A real illness cannot disappear. But your illnesses, 90% of them are unreal, through words you have created. Kue helped thousands. Mesmer helps thousands. Just by creating the feeling that you are not ill. That doesn't show that auto-hypnosis cures illness. That only shows that you are such great auto-hypnotist already, that you create illnesses. You believe in them. And doctors cannot say that your diseases are mental. And you don't feel good if someone says that your disease is mental. You feel very bad. You immediately change the doctor. Whenever a doctor says that you have a very great disease, very big, you feel very good. Because a man like you, so great, somebody, he must have a big disease. Small diseases are for small people. Ordinary diseases for ordinary people. When you have cancer or TB or something dangerous, you feel superior. You are somebody, at least as far as illness is concerned, you are not ordinary. One man became a doctor, graduated from the college, he came home. The father was very much tired working and working. The father was also a medic, he was also a doctor. So he went on a holiday and he says, at least 3 weeks rest and I am going to the hills and now you start working. After 3 weeks the father came back. The boy said, something surprising for you. The lady you have been treating for years and couldn't cure, I have cured her within 3 days. The father bent his head. He said, "You fool, that lady was paying for your education. And I was hoping that through her, all my children will get through the college." Her stomach ache was not real. And I was worried in the hills. "I forgot to tell you that don't touch this woman. She is rich and she needs a stomach ache. And I have been helping her. For years she has been the source of our livelihood. 90% diseases are psychological. They can be cured by mantra. They can be cured by suggestion. They can be cured by Satya Sai Baba." Because in the first place, the real miracle you have already done in creating them. Now anybody can cure them. Continuously repeating a word creates the reality. But this reality is hallucinatory. It is illusion. And you cannot come to reality unless all words have disappeared from the mind. Because even a single word may create illusion. Words are great forces. Even a single word in the mind, and your mind is not empty, whatsoever you are seeing, feeling, is through the word. And that word will change the reality. You have to be completely wordless, thoughtless. You have to be just consciousness. When you are just consciousness, then the boat is empty. The reality is revealed to you. Because you are not repeating anything. You are not imagining anything. You are not auto-hypnotizing yourself. Only then the real appears, revealed. Chuang Tzu is right, he says, "Where can I find a man who has forgotten words? He is the one I would like to talk to." The purpose of fish trap is to catch fish. You have forgotten the purpose completely. You have gathered so many fish traps, constantly worried about them. Somebody may not steal them. They may not be broken. They may not got rotten. Constantly worried about the fish trap. Completely forgotten the fish. The purpose of a fish trap is to catch fish. And when the fish are caught, the trap is forgotten. If you cannot forget the trap, that means the fish is yet not caught. Remember, if you continuously are obsessed with the trap, it shows the fish is yet not caught. And you have forgotten completely about the fish. Got so entangled with the fish traps, fallen in love with them. Once I knew a neighbor. He was a professor, a man of words. He purchased a car. He will clean every day in the morning. He will work on it. It always remained in the showroom condition. He never brought it on the road. For years I watched. He was just in front of me. Every morning he will take so much trouble cleaning, doing everything, signing. But the car remained there. Once we were traveling in the same compartment, so I asked, "Is something wrong with the car? You never bring it out?" It is always in your porch. He said, no, I have fallen in love with it. I love it so much that I'm always afraid. If I take it out, something may go wrong, some accident, some scratch, or anything can go wrong. And that is unbearable even to think. A car, a trap, a word. They are means, not ends. You can fall in love with them. Then you never use them. I used to stay in a house. The lady of the house had 300 saris. But she always used two. She was preserving them for some special occasion. When that special occasion will come? As far as I know, I have known her for 15 years. That special occasion has not come yet. It is not going to come because she is becoming old every day. Sooner or later she will die. And those 300 saris will continue to live. What happened? Fallen into love with saris. You can fall in love with things. It is difficult to fall in love with persons. It is very easy to fall in love with things. Because things are dead, you can manipulate them. Saris will never say, wear us. We would like to go out and have a look. The car will never say, drive me. I'm getting bored. With persons it is difficult. They will demand. They will ask. They would like to go out. They have their own desires to be fulfilled. So always when you fall in love with a person, there is conflict. So those who are clever, they never fall in love with persons. They always fall in love with things. A house, a car, clothes. It is always easy, manageable. And you always remain the master. And the other never creates a trouble. Or if you fall in love with a person, immediately you try to convert him into a thing, in a dead thing. A wife is a dead thing. A husband is a dead thing. Torturing each other. Why they torture each other? What is the point of it? Through torture, they make the other dead, so the other becomes a thing, manipulable. Then you are not worried. Two matrons were looking at a bookshop display window. One said to the other, look, there is a title, a book. And the title is, How to Torture Your Husbands. But the other was not excited. She even didn't look at the book. She said, I don't need it. I have a system of my own. Everybody has a system of his own. How to torture the other? Because only through torture and destruction, a person can be changed into a thing. It happened once. Mullah Nasruddin came into the coffee house, very angry, looking very aggressive and dangerous, and he said, I have heard that somebody has called my wife, old ugly hag. Who is that guy? One man stood up, very tall, a giant-like man, very strong. He said, I call your wife. What about that? Nasruddin immediately calmed down, looking at the person who was saying that. He came near and said, "Thank you, because this is my feeling also, but I couldn't gather the courage to say. You have done it. You are a brave man." What is happening in relationship? Why it always goes ugly? Why it is so impossible to love? Why everything becomes poisonous? Because a mind is always happy to manipulate things, because the things never rebel. They are always obedient. They never disobey. A person is alive. You cannot predict what he is going to do. And you cannot manipulate. The other's freedom becomes the problem. Love is such a problem because you cannot allow the other the freedom to be. And remember this, if you really love, and real love is possible only when you allow the other total freedom to be himself or herself, but then you cannot purchase. Then you cannot predict. Then you cannot be secure. Then everything has to move from moment to moment, and mind wants to plan, be secure and safe. Mind wants the life to run on a track, because mind is the most dead thing in you. As if you are a river, and there is floating a frozen part of the river. An ice cube. Your mind is just like the ice frozen part of you. And the mind wants you to make completely frozen, then there is no fear. Because whenever there is new, there is fear. With old, there is no fear. Mind is always happy with the old. That's why mind is always orthodox, never the revolutionary. There has never been a mind who can be called revolutionary. Mind cannot be revolutionary. Buddha is revolutionary. Chuang Tzu is revolutionary because they have no minds. Lenin is not revolutionary. Stalin, absolutely not. They cannot be. With minds, how can you be revolutionary? Mind is always orthodox. Mind is always a conformist. Because mind is the dead part in you, this has to be understood. There are many dead parts in you, because the body has to throw them out. Your hairs are dead. That's why you can cut them easily and there is no pain. Your nails are dead. That's why you can cut them easily and there is no pain, no hurt. Body goes on throwing. Consciousness also has to throw many things, otherwise they will accumulate. Mind is the dead part, like the hairs. And this is symbolic. Buddha said to his disciples to save their heads, just as a symbol. As you save the hairs completely, save the inner consciousness also completely of the mind. Both are dead. Don't carry them. It is beautiful. Don't allow the dead part to accumulate. What is mind? Your past, your experiences, your learning, all that has been. Mind is never present. How it can be? Here and now, mind cannot be. If you simply look at me, where is the mind? If you simply sit here and listen to me, where is the mind? If you start arguing, the mind comes. If you start judging, the mind comes. But how you judge? You bring the past to the present. The past becomes the judge of the present. How do you argue? You bring the past as an argument. When you bring the past, the mind comes in. Mind is the dead part of you. It is the excreta. And just as there are constipated people and suffer very much, there is mind constipation. Excreta accumulated. You never throw it. In your mind, things only go in. You never throw it. Meditation is throwing the mind out, unburdening you. The excreta has not to be carried. Otherwise, you will become dull, more and more dull. That's why a child has a fresh mind, because no accumulation. So sometimes children can say things your philosophers cannot say. Sometimes they look and penetrate into realities your man of knowledge misses. Children are very, very penetrating. They have a clarity. They look fresh. Their eyes are not filled. A sage is again a child. He has emptied his boat. He has emptied himself of all the cargo. Skrita has been thrown. He is not constipated. His consciousness is a flow. It has no frozen parts. The purpose of a fish trap is to catch the fish. And when the fish are caught, the trap is forgotten. The purpose of words is to convey ideas. When the ideas are grasped, the words are forgotten. If you really understand me, you will not be able to remember what I said. You will catch the fishes. You will drop the trap. You will be what I said, but you will not remember what I said. You will be transformed through it. You will not become a more learned man through it. You will be more empty through it, less filled. You will go more fresh from me, not burdened. Don't try to gather what I say, because whatsoever you gather will be wrong. Gathering is wrong. Don't accumulate. Don't fill your treasure from my words. Words are excreta. They are not worth. Throw them. Then the meaning will be there. And meaning has not to be remembered. It never becomes part of the memory, it becomes part of your wholeness. You have to remember a thing only when it is part of the memory, just of the intellect. You never need to remember a real thing that has happened to you. If it happens to you, it is there. What is the need to remember? Don't repeat, because repetition will give you a false notion. Listen, but not to the words. Just by the side of the wordless is being given to you. Don't be too much focused on the words. Just look a little sideways also, because real thing is being given there. Don't listen to what I say. Listen to me. I am also here, not only the words. And once you listen to me, then all words will be forgotten. It happened, Buddha died. And the bhikkhus and his disciples were very much disturbed because nothing was accumulated, collected of his sayings when he was alive. They completely forgot. And they were not thinking that he is going to die so soon, so suddenly. Disciples never think of that. That the master may disappear suddenly. Suddenly one day Buddha said that I am going. There was no time. He has been speaking for 40 years. When he was dead, how to collect? A treasure is lost. What to do? And this is beautiful. Mahakashyap could not say anything. He said, I heard him, but I don't remember what he said. I was so much in it. It never became part of my memory. I don't know. And he had become enlightened. Sariputra, Modganayan, all those who have become enlightened, they said, they're so difficult. He has said so much, but we don't remember. And these were the disciples who have preached. Then Ananda was approached. He had yet not become enlightened while Buddha was alive. When Buddha died, then he became enlightened. He had remembered everything. He dictated word to word. 40 years continuously he was with Buddha. He dictated word to word. A man who was not enlightened looks paradoxical. Those who had reached, they should have remembered. Not this man who has not yet reached the other soul. But when the other soul is reached, this soul is forgotten. And when one has become oneself a Buddha, who cares to remember what Buddha said? The purpose of a fish trap is to catch fish, and when the fish are caught, the trap is forgotten. The words of the Buddha were traps. Mahakashyap has caught the fish. Who bothers about the trap now? Where the boat has gone? Who bothers? He has crossed the stream. Mahakashyap said, I don't know what this fellow said. And you cannot rely on me. Because with me, it is difficult to separate what he said and what I said. Of course it will be so. When Mahakashyap has become a Buddha himself, how? To separate. The two are not two. But Anand said, I will relate. Very authentically he related. Humanity is in a great debt to this fellow Anand, who was ignorant yesterday. He has not caught the fish. So he remembered the trap,
he was still thinking to catch the fish, so he has to carry the trap.
The purpose of words is to convey ideas, and the ideas are grasped, the words are forgotten. Remember this as a basic law of life, that the useless, the meaningless, the peripheral looks so significant because you are not aware of the center. This world looks so significant because you are not aware of God. When the God is known, the world is forgotten. And it is never the otherwise. People have tried to forget the world so that they can know God. It has never happened and it will never happen. You can go on trying and trying to forget the world. You cannot forget. Your very effort to forget will become a continuous remembering. Only when God is known, the world is forgotten. You can go on struggling how to drop thinking, but you cannot drop thinking unless consciousness is achieved. Because it is a substitute. How can you drop the trap when the fish is not caught yet? The mind will say, don't be foolish. Where is the fish? How can you drop the words when you have not realized the meaning? So don't try to fight with the words. Try to reach to the meaning. Don't try to fight with thoughts. That's why I insist again and again. If thoughts disturb you, don't create any struggle with them. Don't wrestle with them. If they come, let them come. If they go, let them go. You don't do anything, you be just indifferent. You just be a watcher, an onlooker, not concerned. That's all that you can do right now. Not concerned. Don't say, don't come. Don't invite. Don't reject. Don't condemn. Don't appreciate. Simply remain indifferent. Look at them, they come as clouds. And they go as clouds disappear. Let them come and go. You just don't come in their way. Don't pay attention to them. Because if you are against them till you start paying attention, then immediately you are disturbed. Whenever a thought enters, you are disturbed. My meditation is lost. Nothing is lost. Meditation is your intrinsic nature. Nothing is lost. If sky is lost and clouds come, nothing is lost. Being different. Don't be bothered by them, this way or that. Sooner or later you will feel and you will realize their coming and going has become slower. Sooner or later you will come to see, now they come but not so much. Sometimes the traffic stops, the road is wet. One thought has passed, another has not come yet, there is interval. In that interval, you will know your inner sky and its absolute glory. But if a thought enters, let it enter. Don't get disturbed. If you can do this much, and only this much can be done, nothing else is possible. Inattentive, indifferent, not caring. Just remaining a witness, watching, not interfering, the mind will go. Because nothing can be retained inside if you are indifferent. Indifference is cutting the roots, the very roots. Don't feel antagonistic because that again is feeling. You have to remember friends, you have to remember enemies, and more so. Friends you can forget, How can you forget the enemies? You have to constantly remember them because you are afraid. People are disturbed by thoughts, ordinary people. Religious people are disturbed more because they are constantly fighting. But through fighting you pay attention, and attention is food. Everything grows if you pay attention. Grows fast, becomes more vital. You just be indifferent. Buddha has used the word upeksha. It means absolute indifference, neither this nor that, just in the middle. Neither friendly nor inimical, nor far nor against, just in the middle, looking, as if you are not concerned, as if these thoughts don't belong to you, as if they are part of the great world. Let them be there. One day, suddenly, when the indifference is total, the consciousness shifts from the periphery to the center. But it cannot be predicted and it cannot be planned. One has to go on working and waiting. Whenever that happens, you can laugh. Those thoughts were there because you wanted them to be there. Those thoughts were there because you were feeding them constantly. And those thoughts were there because the fish was not yet caught. How can you throw the trap? You had to carry it. I remember once it happened in Mullah Nasruddin's country. The king was in search of a wise man. His old wise man had died. The old dying wise man has said that when you replace me, find a man the most humble in the kingdom, because ego is anti-wisdom. Humbleness is wisdom. So find the most humble man. So secret agents were sent all over the kingdom to spy and search the most humble man. They reached to Nasruddin's village. He had heard about it. He had heard the old man has died. So he thought what he should have suggested as the indication of a wise man. He had read, he had known the ancient lore that the humblest is the most wise. So he logically concluded, inferred, that that old man must have said that find the humblest man. So he became the humblest man. Came the king's man in search. Mullah Nasruddin was very rich. But they saw him, richest man in that town, he was carrying a fish net coming from the river. The humblest job in that town. So they thought, this man seems to be very humble. They asked Nasruddin, why you carry this fish net? You are so rich, you need not go on fishing. Nasruddin said, I became so rich through fishing. I started my life as a fish catcher. I have become rich, but just to pay respect to the original profession that gave me so much, I always carry this fish net on my shoulder. A real humble man. Otherwise, if a poor man becomes rich, he starts cleaning his whole past so that nobody knows that he was ever a poor man. He will drop all contacts which can show and indicate that once he was a poor man. He would not like to see his relatives. He would not like to be remembered of the past, to be reminded of the past.
He simply drops the past completely. He creates a new past as if he is in born aristocrat. But this man is humble. So they inform the king that Mullah Nasruddin is the most humblest man we have ever seen. He was appointed the wise man. The day he was appointed, he threw the net. Those men who had recommended, they asked Nasruddin, "Where is your net now?" He said, "When the fish is caught, net is thrown." But you cannot throw it before. It is impossible. You have to carry it. But carry it indifferently. Don't get attached. Don't fall in love with it. Because one day it has to be thrown. If you fall in love with it, then you may never catch the fish. Just afraid that if you catch the fish, then the net has to be thrown. Don't fall in love with the mind. It has to be used. It is there because you don't know the no mind yet. You don't know the innermost core of your being. The periphery is there and you have to carry it, but carry it indifferently. Don't become a victim to it. One mystery. It happened. A man on every of his birthdays will go to the race course. The whole year he will accumulate just for one stake on his birthday. And he was losing and losing for many years. But hope always revived again and again. Every time he decided not to go again, but one year is so far. For a few days he will remember and then he will again be hopeful and think, "Who knows? This year I may become rich. And why not one effort more?" By the time the birthday will come, he will be again ready to go to the race course. And it was his 50th birthday. So he thought, "I should try wholeheartedly." So he sold all his possessions, gathered a small treasure, all that he had earned in his whole life, all that he had. And he said, "Now I have to decide, this side or that. Either I am to become a beggar or an emperor. No more in the middle, enough." He went there on the window. He looked at the names of the houses and he thought, "There is a house, Adolf Hitler, it will do." He was such a great man, such a winning, victorious man. Threatened the whole world. This house must be ferocious and strong. So he staked on, and he lost, as all those who stake on Hitler's will lose. Now nowhere to go, even the house is lost. So what to do? Nothing else than to commit suicide. So he went to a cliff just to jump and finish. When he was just to jump, suddenly he heard a voice. He couldn't recognize whether from the outside or from the inside. He heard, "Stop." "Next time, I will give you the name of the house. One try more. Don't kill yourself." Hope revived. He came back. He worked hard that year because it was going to be a
the victorious thing he has been waiting for his whole life. The dream has to be fulfilled. He worked hard day and night. He earned much with a trembling heart. He reached to the window. He waited. Then a voice said, "Okay, choose this heart's Churchill." Without any argument, without thinking about it, without his mind coming in, he staked all and he won. Churchill came first. He went again to the window, waited. The vice is now Stalin victor. He staked all. Stalin came again, the first. Now he had a big treasure. Third time he reached, he waited. The wise said, "No more." But he said, "Keep quiet. I'm winning. My stars are high. And nobody can defeat me now." So he chose Nixon. And Nixon came last. The whole treasure last, again a beggar. Standing there, he muttered to himself, "Now what to do?" Said the inner voice, "Now you can go to the cliff and jump." In moments when you are going to die, the mind stops, because there is nothing for it to work. The mind is part of life. It is not part of death. When there is no life ahead, mind stops. There is no work. It is unemployed immediately. And when mind stops, the inner voice comes in. It is always there, so much noise, that still a small voice cannot be heard. The voice had not come from beyond. There is nobody beyond. Everything is within. The God is not in the skies. It is in you. He was going to die. The last decision taken by the mind. But then the mind retires. Now no more work. Suddenly he heard the voice. This voice came from his innermost core. And the voice that comes from the innermost core is always right. Then what happened? Twice the voice worked. But then the mind entered again. And the mind said, "Don't listen to such nonsense. Stars are high. And we are winning." Remember this, whenever you win because of the inner voice. But always, the mind comes in and takes charge. Whenever you feel happiness, it is always from the inner. Mind immediately jumps in and takes the control and says, "It is because of me." When you are in love, love is like death. You feel blissful. Immediately mind comes in. And he says, "Okay, this is me, this is because of me." Whenever you meditate, there are glimpses, the mind comes in. And he says, "Be happy. Look, I have done it." And immediately the contradicts last. Remember this, with mind you will always be a loser. Even if you are victorious, your victories will be just defeats. With mind there is no victory. With no mind there is no defeat. And you have to shift your whole consciousness from mind to no mind. Once no mind is there, everything is victorious. Once the no mind is there, nothing goes wrong. Nothing can go wrong. With no mind, everything is absolutely as it should be. One is content. Not a single fragment of discontent remains. One is absolutely at home. You are an outsider because of the mind. This shift is possible only if you become indifferent. Otherwise, this shift will never be possible. Even if you have glimpses, those glimpses will be last. And you have glimpses before us. It is not only that in prayer and meditation glimpses happen. Glimpses happen in ordinary life also, making love to a woman. The mind is stops. That's why sex is so appealing. It is the natural ecstasy for a single moment. Suddenly mind is not there. You feel blissful and content. But for a single moment, immediately the mind comes and starts how to get more. How to stimulate. Planning, controlling, manipulating comes in. You have missed. Sometimes without any reason or rhyme, you are walking on the street, under the trees. Suddenly a sunray comes, falls on you. A breeze touches your face. Suddenly, as if the whole world has changed for a single moment. Ecstatic. What was happening? You were walking, unworried, not going somewhere, just having a walk, a morning or evening walk. In that relaxed moment, suddenly, without your knowing, consciousness shifted from the mind to the no mind. Immediately there is beatitude. But the mind comes in and says, I must get more and more moments like this. Then you can stand there for years, for lives, it will never happen again. Because it never happened because of the mind. In ordinary life, in day-to-day life, not in temples only, in shops and offices also, the moments come. The consciousness shifts from the periphery to the center. But the mind controls immediately again. Mind is the great controller. You may be the master, but he is the manager. And the manager has absorbed so much control and power that the manager thinks he is the master. And the master is completely forgotten. Be indifferent to mind. Whenever moments come which are wordless, silent, mind comes, don't help and don't cooperate with it. Just look. Let him say whatsoever it says. Don't pay much attention. It will be there. In meditation it is happening every day to you. Many come to me, they say, it happened on the first day, but then it has not been happening. Why it happened on the first day? You are more prepared now. On the first day you were not so prepared. Why it happened on the first day? It happened on the first day because the manager was unaware what is going to be. He couldn't plan. Next day the manager knows well what is to be done. Breathing fast. Then crying, screaming. Then hoo-hoo. The manager knows well. And the manager is doing. Then it will not happen. Manager has taken charge. Remember this. Whenever a blissful moment happens, don't ask for it again. Don't ask it to be repeated. Because all repetition is of mind. Don't ask it for again. If you ask, then the mind will say, I know the trick, I will do it for you. When it happens, feel happy and grateful and forget. The fish is caught. Forget the trap. The meaning is caught. Forget the words. And the last, whenever meditation is complete, you will forget meditation. And only then, when you will forget meditation, it has come to a fulfillment. The climax is reached. Because now you are meditative 24 hours. It is nothing to be done. It is there. It is you. It is your being. And if you can do this, and meditation becomes a continuous flow, not an effort on your part, because all effort is of the mind. If meditation becomes your natural life, spontaneous life, your power, then I tell you, someday John Kazu will catch hold of you, because he wants. Where can I find a man who has forgotten words? He is the one I would like to talk to. He is in search. I have seen him here many times, wandering around, just waiting. If you forget the words, he will talk to you. And not only John Kazu, Krishna, Christ, Lao Tse, they are all in search of you. All the enlightened people in search of the ignorant. But they cannot talk, because they know a language which is of silence. And you know a language which is of madness. They cannot meet anywhere. They are in search. All Buddhas that have ever existed are in search. Whenever you are silent, you will feel they have been always all around you. It is said, whenever the disciple is ready, the master appears. Whenever you are ready, the truth will be delivered to you. There is not even a single moment's gap. Whenever you are ready, it happens immediately. There is no time gap. Remember Chan Dasu. Any moment he may start talking to you. But before he starts talking, your talking must go. Enough for today?